further ado, it is time to introduce our guest for this evening.
Gary Collins of the Primal Power Method, and who is doing an off-grid home building project. Gary, how are you?
Good. Just in between off-season now of the building. It's winter, so I'm in a warmer, well, kind of sunnier place in California at my folks, waiting it out.
Awesome. You're building... We'll talk about... Where are you building at? Where is that located?
Yeah, what part of California are you in?
You're out of California, I know that.
Oh, yeah. No, I'm not building in California. I'm no longer a California resident. I haven't been for 2 years. I got out of Crazyville, as I like to call it, after being born and raised here and living on and off in California, you know, all my life. But I bought a place in Northeast Washington. I bought 20 acres up there of raw land. About 2.5-3 years ago.
Oh, nice. That sounds awesome.
And we're going to talk more about you later on that. Washington's a super pretty place. Like that's on my list of places to visit. Sadly, when I was younger growing up, actually, like, California is where I wanted to move to. Cause, you know, it looks good in, like, you know, literature and TV and stuff, but they're so, California could be the greatest state if it didn't have fucking idiots in it.
Oh,
I mean,
God, yeah.
I mean, they ruined it.
Well, I grew up in a remote area in California. I grew up in a town of like 1,800 people in the mountains, which people are
so like
pretty
Northern.
Talk to find that there's, you know, like rural kind of hidden places. But I grew up a little, you know, a redneck. You know, I grew up just like, you know, where I live in Washington now. But I had to move to big cities as, you know, I went to college, worked in the government. And all that.
Right.
Now, if you can live in these little remote small towns, it's good. But the problem is you're paying triple what it would cost in a little town, you know, in Iowa. You know,
right.
That's the problem. The insanity seems to have found the small towns. And another problem is that back when I was growing up, you know, the border's quite a ways away. But illegal immigration has now invaded the small towns, too, which is really sad. Not to get into politics or anything like that, but it sucks. I mean, now you have gangs in these little towns. You have drug runners. It's turned them upside down. I call California basically a third world country anymore. It's ridiculous, especially Southern California. I'm sure I'll rub a couple people raw with that one who are Californians, but it's the truth.
Don't worry, they won't be able to understand English anyway.
I know I do have some listeners and fans in California, but I doubt they're the ones that would be offended by this. They're probably the ones that, like, I mean, honestly, the weather there is fucking amazing. I would love to live in California.
Let me ask you, do you know about that state that almost was right on the California-Oregon border?
No.
Silly trivia, yeah.
Yeah, it's just one weird piece of trivia. Like when you drive up to the California Oregon border, you'll start seeing signs like "Welcome to the state of," and it's a state that doesn't exist but almost did. And I can't remember the name of it right offhand.
We've got that in Tennessee.
You have to tell me. I drive through there, you know, up and down all the time when I'm going to the property and then coming back down to my folks' place and down here.
Yeah, it's like this weird pseudo-alleged, you know, ghost state that extends a little ways down into California and a little ways up into Oregon. I can't remember the name of it for the life of me, but you'll start seeing road signs, "Welcome to the state of..."
Whatever.
God, I can't remember the name of it. It's crazy.
I'm sure I've seen it. I just never came.
Right. So, who is Gary Collins and why are you going to live off-grid? I think you've kind of covered that California sucks. But
well, I have a master plan, you know, people ask me a lot and I built my business, the Primal Power Method, which makes me interesting. I know we talked about it before, but I'm a health and nutrition guy, in the primal paleo, kind of paleo side. I don't even lump myself in with that group anymore. And I'm sure they're happy that I don't, because I call them all out on their bullshit. But
they're all whack jobs anyway.
Yeah. But, you know, I believe I created my philosophy and I created this business around it from my background in the government with the FDA and U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and being a, you know, being a lifelong athlete and health enthusiast. And, you know, so I built my company around that, but I built it to be able to run remotely to kind of eventually kind of go into this off-grid living, but do it on my terms. And it's incredibly hard to do, and there's really no template. You know, there's no roadmap for this. You just got to kind of figure it out on your own. So, you know, I kind of put the plan into, you know, action, I would say 8-9 years ago. I mean, it's been a long time kind of evolving and figuring out where I wanted to live in the country. I traveled and lived all over the place in the government. So I got to see most of the places I was interested in. But I just fell in love with Northeast Washington and Idaho. And I wanted to be in Northeast Washington because I just like that part a little better and the way there's no state income tax up there.
Nice.
Yeah, and that's one of the reasons for business purposes, obviously. But I just liked Washington anyway. I liked the area. And for me, it was, you know, growing up and being in California and living in, you know, San Diego and working in Orange County and L.A. and I just had had it. I mean, for me, I was done. I tell people it's great to be a former resident of California and come back and visit. That's the best way to put it. The weather is phenomenal. You will not find any better weather anywhere else than Southern California, undoubtedly. But it comes with the high price and the craziness. I mean, that's the downside is the quality of life. I don't think it outweighs the problems that you have to deal with living in an environment like that.
Now the land you have up there in Northeast Washington, what's the terrain like up there?
And how did you find it?
Well, I found it. I actually ended up working in a case in Spokane, Washington. I had to go up there several times and I met a girl. I ended up dating a girl up there for a while. So I kind of got familiar with the area. What's that?
So it's always about a girl.
Oh, yeah.
Well, okay.
Most of the major decisions that happen in any man's life involve a woman.
Well, it helped because it made me explore the area more. But I'd been to Washington several times, but Western Washington, because a good friend I grew up with lived there for several years. So I would go up every year and visit. But Spokane, that was kind of my first journey into Northeast Washington. And I just kind of started exploring. I went, you know what? I've looked around the country. I've been trying to find land. You know, I'm going to dig around here a little more. I really like the area. So I started exploring out and I finally went up for 2 weeks, to a little small town, about in between Spokane and the Canadian border and stayed up there. It's very familiar, similar to where I grew up, the way it was set up. And just started exploring and zigzagged the whole quadrant in car. Just every side road, back road, put a couple thousand miles on the rental car, just explored everywhere and found an area. Went, had a bad real estate agent at the beginning, looked at a bunch of crappy lots, got rid of him, went to the small town bank and asked the vice president of the branch, said, hey, do you have any like foreclosures or any, you know, lots that are, you know, that you guys own or you know where to send me? She goes, oh, just go to the real estate office right across the street. I went, you got to be kidding me. Wow. So I walked across the street, go over there, talk to the guy. He goes, oh, yeah, I know this area real well. I grew up here. I think I got a couple lots for you. Went out the next day, looked at two lots. One of them I fell in love with, and that was the end. Just pure. I mean, I put a lot of work into getting to that point, but the end of it was kind of dumb luck. You know, kind of just asking the right person at the right time. But it was stupid on my part. That's where I should have started. You know, I should have started in the small town. Instead, I was using a guy from Spokane who didn't know his ass from a hole in the ground. I mean, he was just trying to sell a guy from California any crappy lot he could find, thinking I would just bite. And that's a problem you're going to have. And I actually finished the first draft of the book that I'm writing on the whole process that, you know, from beginning to end, from life simplification, where I started selling my house, getting rid of all my crap, you know, to looking for land and starting to build. So I kind of take it through this whole journey and all the pieces that I had to put together over all these years and how to do it. Because it is, I just didn't understand how difficult it would be. And the problem too is there's a lot of people looking to take advantage of you. It's just the way society is anymore, unfortunately. And you have to be really careful because they're, you know, in these places where you want to live more remotely and off the grid. I mean, it's just cluttered with burnouts, people who moved in from out of state and got taken advantage of and got all their money taken and left. And then there's also the side that they're idiots and they moved there. And, you know, they show up in their, you know, in their 5 Series BMW where it snows 4 feet, you know, during the winter. And, you know, they got their poodle and their, you know, their wife that likes to shop at the mall every other day. And they can't figure out why they're unhappy there. I don't know. Gee, because you don't fit in, I'm guessing. Throw that one out there, you know. And I did. I met those people. And it was kind of funny to meet them and go, what are you doing? You know, and you realize they've been watching too much TV is about what it boils down to. But, yeah, it's an interesting process. And to find the land and to figure out my land is kind of at the top, kind of a mountain hill is what I like to call it. It's not a tall, tall, huge mountain, but it is up. It's elevated and I'm at the top of it. So I overlook this huge valley and I overlook this lake that I stay at in my travel trailer while I'm building down there. And it's just got these amazing views. And that was one of the things that was on my list is it had to have amazing views and I had to be able to see water or at least have, you know, a creek running through the property, mm-hmm. Which I found both. I never found all of them put together. That was a flaw.
Yeah.
That's another problem. I mean, you start throwing these, you know, dream items on there. And land just shoots skyrockets in price.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, if you got 250 grand, I can find you the most amazing lot in the world.
Oh, I can but, imagine.
Well, yeah, but none of us are, you know, how many people like us have that kind of money?
Yeah, Paul Wheaton, but not the rest of us normal humans, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. You know, most of us are, you know, on a budget trying to figure it out. And for me, I just, like I said, right place, right time. It was a logging lot that had been sitting for a long time. It was on MLS, but it was hard to find. There was two roads leading to it. One road was washed out and the back road into it took you about 45 minutes to get to the property. And it was only like 3 miles and you had to know which forks to take in the road. If you didn't, you're totally lost. I still get lost on that road on my mountain bike sometimes. I kid you not. If I take a wrong fork, I go, oh, man. And so it kind of made it harder to find. And once you got there, you know, it's remote. You know, you don't have a promise of water. There's no utilities run to it. Never has been. The closest utilities were over a mile away. You know, so you're kind of making – you're doing a calculated risk. I mean, I knew there was water there. The other people had wells. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a lake below me. There's a water table. I know there's water. But how much is it going to cost me to get it?
Yeah.
You know, and the well actually costs more than the lot.
Oh, shit.
I got the lot really cheap, though. I paid, I want to say, if I remember right, between $22,000 and $23,000 for the lot.
Wow.
Which was crazy. Yeah, it was the cheapest lot by far I found, and it ended up being the best lot that I found. And it was, like I said, it was just a, you know, dad-son logging business, and they'd been sitting on the lot. He just wanted to get rid of it. You know, he was just looking, so it had already been cleared, but he didn't strip it, so I have a ton of trees on the lot.
Nice.
The landing he made as the building site, he was a real smart guy. I mean, he would turn the lots... All of his logging lots, he turns them into, you know, lots for people to build cabins, you know, hunting cabins or even build a house.
That is smart.
Yeah. Like I said, dumb luck, though. How did I know? You know?
Yeah.
And, so a lot of the road work was done. The trees had been cleared and a lot of dirt work had been done. And that probably saved me in the end. God, you know, probably 100 grand.
Yeah.
Just because it's enormous amount of work. If I could have done it on myself and saved a bunch of money, but it would have taken me years and years to get that lot to where it is now.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. But the thing is, a lot of real estate agents won't show logging lots. They won't even show them. I found that out. They're all, that was a logging lot. Huh? You know, they go, you don't want that. Yeah. It's because they don't know. There's no one who is an expert really in what we're trying to do. Your average real estate agent has no clue about off the grid or living remotely or wanting to do it. They have no idea.
Hey, that can be a good thing. Keep prices low. Well,
and it's an opportunity. The problem is the solution. So, I mean, someone that's a real estate agent that's a prepper survivalist, they can specialize in this and, you know, but
yeah.
I have worked with a real estate agent once before, like when I was actually trying to buy a house, and it was the worst experience ever. Like, she was a dumb fucking idiot. She kept making me drive out to these places to look at these houses, and it was like, you know, I gave her a very specific list of things I wanted, you know, like land, house, you know, and all this stuff. And like one time I put up the house is like 10, 15 feet from the road. The road was a busy intersection.
And how far, one of the specs you gave was how far off the road you wanted the house?
Like fairly far. Like I didn't want to be on a major road.
Yeah. And that was one of my list criteria too. Same thing.
Yeah. And like one house she showed me, like I go inside and I'm looking, you know, and this idiot just shows up the house with, you know, nothing but her clipboard or whatever. And I, of course, prepper, I have a flashlight on me. You know, there's no power in the house. I'm looking with a flashlight and I open the closet door and the entire back of the closet is black mold. And I'm like, I'm out of here.
Yeah.
You know, thanks for wasting it was an hour drive there. It was an hour drive
that
I drove.
Was that all the way out in Mount Juliet?
Watertown.
What? Oh, shit. I knew it was out that way. I didn't realize it was that far out.
Yeah, so I pretty much fired her after that. So,
at least you did yours sooner. I think I looked at something like 10 lots with this guy. I did it the first on my own, and then the last day he came with me, and his car broke down. His piece of shit car broke down twice.
Wow.
Stranded us, you know, the last time on the side of the road. And the sheriff pulls up behind us, and the guy starts getting real jittery, and he goes, man, I got a record. And it's I kid you not. Complete idiot. And you go, well, how'd you get this guy, Gary? He talked great on the phone, you know, I met him, he was fine. Then come to find out he was the owner of the real estate agency's son-in-law. So the guy was a total deadbeat.
Oh, and, God.
You know, gross. And the cop rolls up. He goes, yeah, don't say anything. But, yeah, I have a prior history for, fighting a cop. And I went, oh, God.
Oh, my God.
You know, if this guy grabs his license and punches in, I'm going to be face down in this side of the hill, handcuffed probably to a tree, you know, and I'm thinking, and so that was the end of that one. And yeah, and that's the problem with real estate. I had my real estate license for 8 years. I did it because I've owned several properties. It was my side business while I was in the government. So I'm not completely stupid to this. But I'm not an expert, you know, and it saved me. I mean, what little I know and the properties I've owned, and I've had two houses built. One was a custom from scratch. Even with that knowledge, I still got lost at times and people trying to dupe me. But real estate agents, they're usually 99% of the time, they're going to show you what they want you to buy to make them the most money as opposed to the list you gave them.
Yep.
They never even look at your list. They just go through their list and they go, you're going to look at this, this, and this. And that's the shitty part about the process that really aggravates me is you're trying to simplify your life. And then you got all these ass clowns in the middle, making it more difficult for you to realize your dream.
Yeah.
And it's unavoidable because you can't just do it on your own. That's the part where I've gotten comments because, you know, I've made it very clear that, you know, the things I've dealt with and the issues that have arisen during the project. And I get these guys that go, well, man, simplified living. You just go out and you put it up yourself, man. Build your own house with your hands and this and that. And you're like,
my God.
Okay. Yeah. You know, sounds great. sounds like a great idea, but let's go to reality, boss, and let's think about this. If I was to build this house, first of all, I'm not a general contractor. Basic construction knowledge. The odds of me hurting or killing myself are high at some point. If I do this all on my own, I'm remote. So if I do something bad and I can bleed out and die because no one's around, then I have to enlist either local or someone to help me. Well, how do I get a person who's in the trade who has time to help me on my time frame? They're not.
Oh, yeah.
During when I'm up there during the busy season. You know, it's summer. It's when the weather's good. Anyone worth any, you know, has any skills is booked. You know, everyone's got jobs. So they're basically, my job's going to be a side job, and they're going to squeeze it in whenever they can. Then it's going to take me, you know, extra years to get this done, because now I'm doing it at this slow pace. Everything's going to be exposed to the elements. It's just the reality part to some of the people. They just, when they think of this, people watching too much TV, they go, well, you know, you just go cut down some trees and you build yourself a cabin. Huh?
Yeah, that's the dangerous thing about television. You watch enough of that shit, you start thinking you can do that.
Yeah. I also hate that, like on television and on some, like, you know, posts on the internet, you see people talking about how cheap it is to, like, build a tiny house. And I have a tiny house. And they don't even factor in things like you're going to spend, like, a couple $1,000s on, like, fasteners, screws, nails, bolts. Like,
yeah,
they're like, I built this house for, like, $5,000. Did you steal all the screws and bolts? Like, how did you, like, it's stupid. I don't even understand that.
If you mill your own wood, and don't get me wrong, you know, the remote Alaska stuff's real hot right now.
Yeah.
First of all, the people in remote Alaska, all these people have been living this lifestyle for generations. They are expert builders by default, you know, or know someone who is a neighbor or someone they know or a family member who is an expert builder or expert builders. And, you know, it's like, okay, you have to have a mill. So did you buy the mill? Where'd you get the mill? Yeah, they leave out a lot. There was this Off the Grid episode, and this young couple put a yurt up. I think it was in Montana. Might have been Wyoming. You know, remote part, and you could tell it was such bullshit in the end. You know, because I looked into a yurt. And yurts, and people have asked me about that too. The problem with a yurt in most areas now is considered a permanent structure. So it must be permitted just like a house. You have to go pull all the same permits. So you're going to spend $1,500 in permits for a yurt. Then you got to build, you know, your deck. You got to put it all together. Then you got to put stuff inside it to live like a house. You're going to be 25 to 50 grand deep in a small one.
Yeah.
And I did all the math. I figured it every which way I could. And I went, okay, that is really expensive for a glorified tent.
Yeah.
You know, you're better off going to Home Depot and buying a large shed and insulating it and spending
$6,000.
Yeah, and it will actually be a more stable structure and easier to move when you need to move it.
Which is basically what I did. I had an Amish builder build a shed, you know, so it was an empty, you know, it had my stuff. It was just the empty shell, and then I insulated it, built walls, built the loft, built, painted, all that stuff, you know, and did the flooring and stuff, and I still got a few things left to do. But that way came out fairly cheap, but still not like people say on the internet. You know, it wasn't like I had pocket change and I was like, build me a shed.
I used a similar method to add a room onto my house.
You did.
Well, so. And a good shed isn't cheap. That's the thing. We built my shed from scratch, and I'll tell you what, if I could go back, I would have bought that shed. By the time and effort and money stuck into it, I mean, it came out good in the end, but you know, way these prefab sheds are now, they used to be garbage back in the day. You know, they were tin and, you know, just cheap. They weren't made really. They're meant to put a lawnmower and, you know, your gardening tools in.
Right.
Now they're beefy. I mean, they're basically a skeleton house. Some of them.
Yeah.
I mean, they're really hardcore, but you know, you're going to spend $5,000-$6,000 for the shell and all the components, then you got to turn it, you got to insulate it, You've got to put in, you know, if you got to put in your electrical, plumbing, you got to do all that. You're still going to be, you know, 15, 20 grand deep into a shed. And that's the part I find interesting too, is that everyone, these shows make it sound really, really cheap. Well, that couple, they never gave the price at the end. They talked about how their budget was, and I found it fascinating at the end. I think their budget was $35,000. They never talked about it. From what I saw, it was easily 50 grand what they dumped into living in a yurt. And they weren't done. And they had no road. They worked in town. So they show his fiance getting on a four-wheeler with her high heels in the basket, wearing a dress.
Oh, my God.
I kid you not. I went, oh, my, what a bunch of bullshit this is. Because they couldn't get a car up to the road was too narrow and too rough to get a car up to the building site where their yurt was. So they show her on this, you know, ATV rolling down to their car, and I'm thinking, bullshit. I went, no way. So you're telling me, what are you going to do when it rains? What are you going to do when the road's all muddy and washed out? You're going to be coated in mud, top to bottom. And I went, they aren't living there. They're going up there in between. You know, it's and that's fine. But be honest about it. You know, and how are you going to get out of there in the winter?
It's just anything to make it look good on the screen.
I fucking hate TV.
Well, it's like with that show McDodge. They had it back like he's been living in the woods for 20 years, and no, he hasn't.
No, it was good TV, but yeah, it was not real at all.
Well, so the McDodge thing, and that's you guys. I think most of us catch it, and I was saying the same thing. I went, man, that guy's really clean. Some days I'm all
yeah.
And I'm all, you know, living in the woods is rough. There's one guy, what's that show called? Was it Live Free or Die?
I think I know what you're talking about, yeah.
Yeah. Now, those guys, a couple of them, not all of them, a couple of them, you can tell they're living it. They're rough.
Yeah.
They're skinny. You can tell they're grubby. But a couple of them, you're like, no, this guy's not. You know, this guy isn't living out there full time. There's no way. And I think that's what people look at too. And when I try and explain to people asking me questions, that's what they're relating me to. They're putting me in that kind of bucket. And what I was trying to prove with what I'm doing is that I don't want to live the Unabomber life. You know, that's not where I'm going. I want to live and have the creature comforts. I want a real toilet. I want a shower. I want a septic system. You know, I want good, clean water. You know, I want the basics. I want a normal, as close to a normal house that I can get, but it's going to be built greener and it's going to be more, you know, energy efficient because it has to be. And it's going to be off the grid. But I wanted to prove that, hey, you can live pretty close to what you're living in a city, kind of, you know, in a rough roundabout way. But understanding that it's harder than what they're showing you on TV, and it's a heck of a lot more expensive.
You know, we were talking about utilities and everything earlier in the water. You said you were like over a mile away from the utilities. What do you do for electricity?
It's going to be solar. I have the solar hooked up right now. We hooked it up this last season. I don't have all the panels up, but the system is rough wired. It's all kind of in. We've got to finish it off and get all the right permits pulled and all that. And that's another thing. People think you can just throw solar panels up and, you know, you're good to go. Things have changed. I mean, all this stuff requires permits. You just can't throw shit together. And because now with Google Earth and the county, this is you old guys will like this. I have cameras all around my property and they shoot right to my phone. So I know when anyone's up there, and my neighbors have found this out. Love my neighbors down below. And but I know when anyone's up there, and these people drive up and I'm watching. It's coming to my phone and I'm all, who the hell is this? And so I get ready. I'm going to dial the sheriff up and go, okay, someone's up there. Then I see one of them has a red or orange vest on and then has a clipboard. I go, oh, that's got to be a county. That's got to be a county worker of some sort. It ended up being the auditor's office, the tax assessor.
What?
Yeah. they went rolled right up to my property. They went around all my security gates. They hiked up, parked their cars down the road, hiked up probably a mile, and were checking my property out. So if you think you're going to skate and get by, good luck. And if you do it wrong, you're going to pay for it. Not only that, then you're going to have to pay the fines. And now you're on the radar. So instead of them inspecting you every 4 years, you're going to be getting it probably every year or 6 months. They're going to be heading up there to see what your dumbass is doing. And
the whole permit and taxes thing, it's such utter freaking political government robbery bullshit.
Yeah.
And I mean, the thing is, today, you're just not going to circumvent it. You know, in Alaska, the rules are different. Alaska is a totally different thing, totally different animal. For the lower 48, there's totally different rules. And even living remotely, that's it. I had to figure out, because I remember when I talked to my real estate agent, I went, man, these trees are in my way. You know, I got, God, who do I have to call to, you know, to get permission to cut the trees down? This was a good one. He goes, you don't have to get any permission. I went, really? I went, in California, if I cut down a tree, I'll be arrested. You know,
oh my God.
Yeah, if I cut down a tree in my yard, man, the police are going to come and haul me away if I don't have permission or something. And he goes, no, you know, he goes, you could cut down whatever you want. No one cares, you know? And I went, oh, okay. So that was the opposite side of it. But a lot of the building codes and the permit process is pretty much the same. I haven't seen a big difference. But I'm doing it by the rules. They appreciate that. The county's been very helpful because they know what I'm trying to do. It's a small place. There's one inspector. You know, I know him well. You know, and I'm told him, I went, I'm not trying to cut corners. Just tell me what I need to do. And if I miss something, tell me and I'll fix it. And so they've been really good, but I guarantee if I would have had the attitude of, you know, screw you, you're the man, I'm going to do whatever the hell I want, man, you know, you know, it would have been all over me, guaranteed. And I don't blame them, you know. It's just the way the world works. But you can still live a simpler life, but you're still going to have to play by the rules. And, you know, guy, I was in the military and law enforcement, worked for a government for half my life. I know how rules work. Do I like them? No, you know, but we got to have something. And if you just have to realize that you're going to have to follow something. You just can't go out, you know, and clear out a space and start putting up a structure and, you know, go put in some homemade septic system and all your shit's rolling downhill into your neighbor's, you know, water and all that. You can't do that. I would be pissed if someone did that above me. That would be hot because all that's going to leach into my water system, you know, into my sanitation. Now I've got issues. So, I mean, some of the rules are there for a good reason.
Yeah. So tell me about your house. How are you building it? What are you using? Because we've actually skipped over that. Like we have no clue what you're doing with your house.
Well, I'm living in a tent connected to a shed. Huh. Oh, kidding. what I did is I built the shed first because that's the power shed. And right. This is kind of the way I learned. I'm working with Backwoods Solar. They're really well known. They've been around for 20 plus years and they kind of specialize in off the grid stuff. So they've been really, really helpful. They don't do any of the installation, but they sell all the products for off the grid living. And all the guys that work there live remotely and live off the grid or at least tied to the grid. But use solar. So I built that first because I needed, that's kind of your hub where all your power is going to go in. And plus you need a place to put your stuff. The first night we got the drilling rig up there, guys came up and stole shit off it. Yeah, go figure. I talked long and hard and I did a security section in the book about that. It doesn't matter how remote you live, people know you're there. And honestly, the more remote you live, the more people know you're there. Because everyone is kind of nosy in the area. They want to know if someone's coming in. And I don't know if they were sending a message or if it was just tweakers trying to, you know, get their little meth fix or what. Whatever it was. But, you know, I made it clear after that, don't step foot on my property because if I find you, there's going to be problems. And then I put all my security up. I had to do that first, I had to stop everything and put up security fences and cameras and do all that first. But that's what I would recommend people doing, is I kind of skipped that. It was in my plan, but I thought, well, I don't have anything up here. You know, so we had basically the floor of the shed done and had to stop. And then I went and just started putting in the fence and putting in all the three wire and, you know, made it pretty secure and made it real clear, put all my signs up. And I haven't had a problem since. So I would recommend, if you do it, start with the security. It sucks. It's costly. It's not in your budget right away. You can't enjoy it. But I would start there because it tells people, you know, A, I'm here. B, stay away. And plus, like mine, I noticed there's a lot of kids and even adults that, you know, that property's been, you know, uninhibited forever, you know. So they've been using it for ATVs. I'm sure they've been hunting up there. That's just the way it is. I mean, I grew up that way. I got caught on people's properties. I didn't know I was on them. You know, I'm out there on my motorcycle and shooting and being, you know, a kid doing stupid stuff. Get rolled up on, they're all, what are you doing? And I'm like, well, I don't know. Have fun. And they're all, you're on my property, jackass. And you're like, oh, okay. I didn't know, you know, sorry. And so you let them know too, hey, don't come up here anymore. You know, this is, you know, I'm now going to be either living here or have something. Then I built the shed, you know, to store stuff, to protect it. And that was where the power was all going to go. The house is, and what made it more difficult too for me, where I couldn't just throw something together, is I was trying to maximize the views. So my structure was going to be a two-story. So trying to build a two-story on your own, yeah, you're just asking to kill yourself. I mean, you're just asking for it. I don't care how you tie yourself down. You'll just end up hung upside down, all the blood rushing to your head till you pass out. So I went with a contractor. I went back and forth. I thought about, you know, getting a handyman and us doing it, and just the time-wise and the danger. And I decided to go with a more established contractor who said he had a background in green building and off the grid. He really didn't. It's become trendy. Oh, wow. So all these jackasses are saying how to do it and they don't. And they see money signs because a lot of retards from California, New York are trying to move out remotely and they basically rob them because they don't know any better. And he talked me into a product called Faswall, which is a interlocking green brick that's 85% wood chip and 15% concrete. Don't get me wrong. Great product. I'm glad I used it, but it's difficult to work with, far as it's new. It's not hard, but it's just different. You know, it's like cinder block. So, you know, you're routing all your conduit through it prior, then you're going to have to route stuff, you know, around it afterwards. But I put in a crawl space purposely for that. That was always part of the plan, was to have a crawl space. Just because of the lessons learned being a slab building and, you know, stuff freezing and breaking. I just have always have been a fan of a crawl space to be able to access that stuff.
Absolutely.
Oh yeah. And it's huge. If you're going to go remote, I highly recommend a crawl space, as opposed to, they'll try and talk you into a slab because that's what they're used to doing. You know, they don't do a whole lot of crawl spaces, but for ease, and especially, you know, for me, I don't plan to live there right now all year. I'm a wimp when it comes to cold weather. So and plus I want to travel. So when the weather gets cold, I want to go south and, you know, head down to Arizona, and I'm starting to get into gold panning and I want to start doing some other stuff. Mm-hmm. So with that, you got to be able to drain, you know, get it winterized and be able to drain all the water out of your plant. Well, the easiest way is if it's all underneath, you pop a, you know, a plug and let it drain all out.
Oh yeah.
You know, it's kind of hard to do that if you have a slab and everything's run underneath the slab. You know, I mean, you can suck it out with a vacuum system or whatever, but why go that route? And then, so I built it out of this brick and it's small. It's under 1,000 square foot, both stories. And, I was going to go with it was going to kind of look like a Forest Service lookout. That was the plans I put together. A guy did one in Montana that was really well known. It got in a lot of magazines. but it was just going to be too hard to build with the size and the way it was. So I had to tweak the design and do it a little differently and use a normal pitched roof. We had a four gable roof before with a skylight. It just was going to be too complicated, too expensive, too complicated. So it's basically just a two-story square with a pitched roof that comes out. It's going to overlook. We're going to have a deck surrounding that I'll put on there just on two sides and maximizing the views. It's already, you can go on YouTube. It's dried in. So it's all there. You'll see the structure and you'll see what it looks like. And, you know, I wanted to go smaller in the beginning. I was looking probably around 600 square foot. But the problem I found with that is if I wanted, you know, if I had family or friends come up to visit, it was going to be really tight. There just wasn't going to be a whole lot of space. And I didn't want it just to be for me. You know, this is part of this was to have other people, my friends, family come up and enjoy it as well. So I built it a little bigger for that reason, just so there was enough room. And I'm putting two bathrooms in it for that, one downstairs, one upstairs, you know, full baths.
Nice. And,
but otherwise, it's open. It's an open floor plan. You know, it's the wall. Only walls are for the bathroom and closet, and that's it. And otherwise, it's just based on views and deck. So it's pretty cool. I mean, I've gotten a lot of comments, and, you know, it's nice to know that people are looking at it and going, right on. That's nice. You know, and you go, oh, God, you know, thank God I didn't screw this all up.
I saw the picture and the brick, like the design looks good and the brick really looks good. I mean, you said you had some issues with it, but the brick looks good. I mean, it looks kind of like cinder block, to be honest. So are you going to paint that? I mean, what, are you going to leave the cinder block or the eco block or whatever you called it?
Well, there's a couple companies. They call it interlocking block. They make it out of cinder, too. It just goes together like a puzzle, but you fill the cells with concrete and rebar. So, like, I mean, it's a little more complicated than people think. I know there's guys out there who have done it. They emailed me and said, hey, I did use that product, and I did it on my own. But, like I said, I just never worked with it, and it just the learning curve would have been enormous. But you can do it anyway. It's a porous surface, so they say it's meant to breathe. They recommend, and they say the easiest way is to basically stucco it or put a plaster on it. But that looks like crap. I'm not a big fan of that look. You know, it's in the woods. I don't want a stucco house in the woods.
Just, no.
You know, I just don't. So I'm going to do, if you look at the shed is actually the experiment for the house. And that's why I started with the shed as well. I wanted to work the shed to kind of gauge what the house was going to look like, far as colors, far as, you know, the siding. So they would match up pretty much. And I would have a good idea by the time I got to the house of what I wanted to do. So I'm going to use, you know, the hardy backer or, the concrete slash, you know, siding. Because it's fireproof, even though it's already fireproof. But yeah. I'm going to use that. It's more weatherproof. It's more permanent. And then we got to figure that out. That's what we're trying to figure out, because the guy who did the construction, who I fired, because he's an asshole and a complete idiot, totally tried ripping me off. And we had long talks about, don't rip me off, dude. This isn't my first rodeo. And what's he trying to do? Tries to rip me off right away. So, and another person looking to do what I'm doing, one of my followers and in the community, he was working with him. We didn't know it, and he contacted me, and I saved him because he's about ready to rip him off as well. So it worked. I saved one person. But now I'm kind of having to start over, and I had to find a guy who's been working with this type of product for the last 25 years. So I'm trying to figure out the siding. I do want it to be that siding like that's on the shed, the slats, the concrete slats, and see, we just have to figure it out. That's what next season's about, is trying to figure out after this monkey guy screwed everything up. Now I got to come in and fix it. And yeah, that's part of the problem. Some of the things he did are going to make it challenging to get it to where I need to. just because he cut some corners here and there and didn't do things necessarily to code, but they can be fixed.
Oh my God.
But that's part of the exercise, right? You know, anyone who's built the house, it's painful. I've never talked to one person who's ever come to me and went, man, I'm going to build another house soon. That was so enjoyable.
Oh, God.
Hell no.
Oh, hell no.
No, it is excruciating. Building a house, I don't care who the contractor is. I don't care how it goes, how much it costs, if you're under, which I've never heard anyone coming under budget either.
no, that doesn't exist.
Ever. And
no.
It just is, and that's part of the deal, too. I try and explain in the book and in stuff I write is, hey, you're going on this kind of life adventure. It's going to be painful. And I'm being honest about it. There's going to be times when you're going to go, I don't want to do this anymore. You know, but it's worth it. But it's just not as easy as everyone makes it sound.
No. When I was just, you know, I was picking things I wanted to do in my house. One of the things I liked was I saw that paper bag flooring people were doing. Mm-hmm. And it looked like it was going to be a cheap solution. So if people don't know, you get like brown paper bag, like contractor contact paper. You tear pieces, you wrinkle it up, you glue it to the floor, and then you put polyurethane over it, a couple coats of that. I did my my living room, which is like 12 by 12 or so, 12 by 12. It took me 40 hours to do a 12 by 12 space.
See, and at first he was trying to go all artsy with it, who have little, you know, very small pieces of paper.
Which was stupid.
Okay, and like very quickly the pieces of paper just started getting bigger and bigger and bigger.
Yeah, yeah. My flooring looks amazing, but it's a pain in the ass.
Well, and that's where you learn too, James, is you got to balance, and that's where I was trying to, you know, people were emailing, give me a hard time because they thought I wasn't doing it, you know, the right way, and there is no right way. It's your own adventure, and you got to pick exactly. and choose your battles in it. And nothing gets it. Hey, if you can build a house on your own, do it on your own. Hey, man, that is awesome. I think that is the most amazing way to go. I just think realistically for most of us, it's not going to happen that way.
No.
And, you know, I'm trying to balance too. I'm all, where can I spend my time? You know, I got to run a business. I have a life. I have to decide what I'm going to sub out and have someone else do, what I can do. And, you know, I've gone back and forth on flooring 8 million times. I'm all, okay, I'll just do tile. It's more durable. I have dogs, you know, tracking stuff in. Then I go, okay, I have tiled multiple properties now. And I swore after the last one, I was never laying one square of tile ever again.
Yeah.
And I start thinking of the time involved and I go, okay, that's going to take me forever to tile this place and the labor. And oh my God, now I'm all, okay, I'm just going to go, you know, wood floor. Yeah,
there
I can glue it down, snap it in, done, quick. You know, it should take me a couple days, and I'm done with it. Yeah, yes. It's tough. And you don't know till you get started, and there's going to be stuff you're going to rip out. You're going to do it, and you're going to look at it and go, yeah, that sucks. I'm going to have to tear that out and start over. And that's what I'm trying to avoid, because I've done that in the past on houses. You know, I've ripped tile out, put tile in, looked at it and went, oh man, you know, I found a slope in the floor that I didn't catch. And I had a whole section that sloped in the middle of my kitchen.
Oh my God.
And I didn't know. I was just trying to get it done. And I wasn't, I was rushing, not paying attention. And I stood back after I did it and it dried. I had to pull out like 20 tiles and resurface it. Oh, it was brutal. And I remember going, never do that again, Gary. Never rush it. Take your time. Pay attention to what you're doing. And there's so many lessons in doing this that, and they're all, like we talked about, they're all individual. You know, you're going to do it your way. You have your list of what you want it to be. It's not like you're going into a residential neighborhood and it's a cookie cutter house, cookie cutter property. You know, my 20 acres is going to be different than anyone else's 20 acres. They're not going to be the same. So there's challenges to that as well. You know, topography,
right.
You know, are you uphill, downhill? where do you want to build? Where's the easiest way to put your septic, gravity in septic? Because if you don't go gravity, then you got to go a pressure system. Well, that costs three times as much. You know, if you have to use a pressure system because you can't, you don't have enough depth to get a normal gravity system in, or you don't have the slope to put it in. That's, I mean, all these things pop up as you're going along, and you just got to kind of figure it out and roll with it. And another thing I would say too is everyone's learned, you're not doing this in one summer. It ain't going to happen.
No. I started building my house last, you know, I told you I got a prefab shell for an outside, and then I started doing the inside and stuff. I got it finished enough, like the living room, the loft, the kitchen and stuff is, you know, well enough to cook in and stuff, but the bathroom is pretty much nothing in there. It's not done. The kitchen's not done. You know, like, I got it enough to move in so I didn't have to, like, commute like you're doing, because that is a pain in the ass. And, but yeah, I still have roughly, like, not half, but about, you know, the back half of the house still needs to be finished. And all the trim work isn't done. Like, my windows, you can still see the spray foam on them and stuff. It's not, like, you see people on TV and YouTube, and they're like, you know, they'll get finished in like a couple of days or something. I'm like, that's not real.
No. Yeah. Yeah. An hour show of them remodeling their kitchen probably took them 6 weeks, you know, just to do that kitchen. And, you know, I've gutted houses, you know, I've done it. And it took me 2 years to remodel my last house, just the inside. And I did most of the work myself. And I worked a lot of hours, and that's where I kind of learned my lesson with this one too, of, you know, that balance of, okay, what can I do myself and what's going to take me, you know, how long? And in the beginning, I thought I could swing it with a good contractor and get it done in 6 months, but I didn't have the money. You know, that was the problem too, is off the grid, there's no financing. You're paying cash. And that's another thing people don't understand, is if you're not tied to utilities, a bank is not going to finance you. That is like their number one written rule of financing. You have to be tied to a public utility to get financing. Because otherwise, it's a huge risk for a bank. Because now if they have to repossess this property or take it back, they have a very small group who they can market that property to. Mm-hmm. And also, there's no comps. What's the value? You know? How do they finance it? So that was a lesson I had to learn. I thought there would be something somewhere. There's nothing. It's creative financing. It's credit, you know, taking out, you know, zero interest credit lines on your credit cards. You know, I do that for 12 months and then I pay it back until I get back up there and start over again, pay cash. You know, you can't. There's just no way to do it. Personal loans. I mean, there's just real no easy way to do it. So that also extends the project out. And what I've noticed on average, it's 3 to 5 years is what it takes people, all the people I've met and talked to now. That seems to be kind of the running number. I haven't found anyone who's in 1 to 2 years yet. No one.
No. It will probably take me about 3 years before I actually finish everything. Just because... You know, so my way to get the house was I left my corporate job, cashed out my 401k, and used that to buy a house, which I figured now I don't have rent anymore. That was and I kind of saw that I don't want to get into it, but I don't trust the 401ks, and I think that in the near future, maybe not the safest bet. Personally, for me, I'm not giving you advice, but I'd rather have my 401k now in my home that I'll have the rest of my life instead of tied up there. So for me, that was the best decision, and I don't regret it. I mean, I've been in my house now for a year. Right now, actually, I think I moved in last January. So, do not regret it at all. And it probably will take me a few, because now I'm buying things sort of piecemeal. You know, like when I get the money, I can buy, you know, something to upgrade this. Like, I've actually just now added lights to both my bathroom and my kitchen. Before that, it was sort of, you know, oil lamps and stuff, and which worked fine.
Yeah, and that was what I was trying to do actually this summer, was to get it to a point where it was livable. And unfortunately, my crooked contractor, you know, cleaned me out. And I was left with scrambling to finish to dry it in. I had to hire other people, fired him at the end, and now I'm scrambling trying to find people at the busiest part of the season just to get the thing dried in. And, yeah, you know, that's the things you're going to have to deal with. And I've been living in my travel trailer for a year and a half now, and I just kind of move it around as I need to, and I love it. I really enjoy travel trailer living. I debate whether, you know, if I, you know, 2020 is hindsight, but, or hindsight's 2020, if I could go back, if I would just say screw it and live out of my trailer for 3-4 years for fun and just travel around. But it would have delayed the project too. You know, the project, the further you kick it out, the harder it gets. And I knew if I just break ground and I get it started, I'll be committed to getting it done. But that's what I talk about too for people who are kind of testing the waters and aren't real sure. I think the best move I made was going from owning a house, renting a very small place under 500 square foot, and then I transitioned into my travel trailer. And that transition to the travel trailer will tell you a lot about if you can swing it or not, if you're going to be able to mentally deal with it. Because travel trailer living is pretty much like off-the-grid living. I mean, you can go to an RV park and plug in and have your utilities and everything. But it's very similar in a sense. I mean, you can go dry camp in your travel trailer, and that's off-the-grid living. I mean, that is. Go do that for 2 weeks and see how it goes. And you learn a lot of lessons that way, and that's kind of how I looked at it. But it's a tough one. I just, for everyone, you kind of got to find your own path, but that's why I kind of wrote this book, because I couldn't find anything. I don't know about you, but I went looking around and going, okay, let's see, has anyone really done this and documented it really well? And I just wasn't finding anything that was, you know, well organized or kind of a how-to. You know, like we were talking about before we got on, is the remote internet. You know, I had to learn about that. Yeah. I started using my Verizon Wi-Fi hotspot about 3-4 years ago. That was kind of my introduction to it. It was brand new. I was like one of their first customers to use this. And because I told them, hey, I need remote access. You know, I don't have internet connection. I have to try and run a business remotely. And that works fine. But when I got up to the RV park, this RV park I found this last year, I was renting a cabin the year before that I was in a dead spot. There was no cell coverage. Crap. You know, and I went, oh, that kills that plan. So I had to jump into the satellite internet, and that was mind boggling. I mean, about a shady friggin' business. Satellite internet. That
we can talk about this, yeah.
Oh man. And there's nothing that tells you, and so that's why I wrote a whole chapter on it in my book of this whole lesson I had to learn. No cell coverage in the area I'm at. I had to get a cell phone booster, but if you're using satellite internet, you can't use a router-based cell phone booster. It doesn't work. The technology doesn't talk to itself. There's no solution for that. So I had to find this $100 car cell booster that works. It was built for cars, but they have a home package.
I've seen that.
Yeah, and that's what I ended up using. And it gave me just enough coverage to where I could use my cell phone, but I could only, it only works if it's in this holster, but it won't work for the internet. So I can't use the internet on my phone with this booster. It doesn't work. Yeah. So I go and get satellite internet. I went with the company, well, the biggest one, HughesNet.
Yeah. I thought, yeah. You know, I looked at them.
Yeah. I went, this is the biggest one. You know, no problem. The guy who did it, did the installation, he's a contractor. You know, he works for several companies. That's how it works remotely. These guys just don't work for one company.
Right.
And he didn't know. He goes, gosh, you know, he goes, you're in a different location. I haven't installed a bunch out here. The problem with a lot of them is HughesNet, the good news about them is you can test it out and then dump the program if it doesn't work for you. Well, they're one of the few I found out. A lot of them, and there's not a ton of them out there, but a lot of them will not let you just dump it. You're going to pay if you cancel your service. So I tried, but one of the things I found too is it depends. Like HughesNet, from what everything I knew, it's a great service. It works real well. But satellite internet has delays. You know, Skype video doesn't work real well because of the delays. Mm-hmm. Skype is a little iffy, even just audio. But I got it to work. But I was getting really slow speeds. Well, finally I tell him, I go, hey, man, I am dying here. I can't even get, you know, pages to load some days. And we went through all the, you know, technical stuff, the router, connection, looked at everything. Well, come to find out, the node was full on the satellite that I was using. I was like the last guy on the node. So, yeah. So I didn't know this. So you could find a service that has a real good reputation, has really high speeds, but if the node you're running off on that satellite is full and packed or has some large bandwidth users, you're going to suffer. You know, you're going to pay the price. So I had to cancel with them. Cost me, even with their canceling, I think it cost me a couple $100. And I only used them for like a month. So $200, throw it in the air, light it on fire. You know, that's gone. I went with this company called Exceed, and they've been great. It worked real well, but the reason it worked real well, they didn't have the speeds that Hughes had, but their node wasn't as full. So I got better performance on certain things, but still others weren't as good. But that's one of the things you're going to have to deal with too. If you're truly off the grid like me, there's no internet service at my property. There's no internet service at the RV park I'm at. Nothing. There's nothing there. All they got is power and septic at the place I'm at.
Hmm.
So if you're running a business and you're trying to live this life, how do you do it? You know, and it took me this huge experiment of figuring it out. And luckily up at my property, the Verizon Wi-Fi works real well because I'm at the top of a mountain, so I'm line of sight to the cell tower. It's 10 miles, 15 miles away on the other mountain, way over there, but I can see it. You know, from my property, I can see the cell tower.
Right.
Barely. I get my binos and I can find it. So it works well there, but I'm still going to need satellite internet more than likely to compensate because it has a little faster speeds on certain things, but it's also expensive. I mean, it's like $100 a month for 10 to 15 gigabytes of data. You know, it's not unlimited. You just don't get to jump on there and watch Netflix and, you know, download.
No.
They're like, no, that is not how this works. You pay for your gigabytes of data. And once you use it, you know, you're screwed.
So I too had the same problem. The only solution for me, at least at the time, was satellite internet. And I looked at all the people you mentioned. I looked at Hughes. I looked at Exceed. I looked at Wild Blue. And I looked at them all, and I ended up going with Dish Network because it was going to be the same with them to get high-speed satellite internet and satellite TV. So it was about $120 a month to have satellite TV and internet. That way, because like you said, you cannot watch streaming stuff with the internet because it'll just kill it. You're just gone. And it's set up sort of like 1990s cell phone plans. So I get 10 anytime gigabytes, and I get 10 gigabytes of, like, nights and weekends, which their nights are, like, 3 in the morning to, like, 9 in the morning. I get – and I've it's supposed to be 10 gigabytes, but I've just streamed YouTube for, like, 5 hours, and it somehow it doesn't put a dent in it because I guess no one's actually using those 3 a.m. to, like, 9 a.m. minutes.
Yeah.
So and I've not done anything like set up automatic downloads, but I have – you know, been awake at that time and watched stuff, and it still says it had 10 gigabytes after, you know, 4 hours of YouTube. But yeah, I have ran out of my normal 10 gigabytes a few times because you're trying to run a business. Like you said, uploading podcasts, that takes a lot of bandwidth. Uploading YouTube videos, you know, your bandwidth is out the window. After that, so I thought they would actually cut me off. They throttled me back to, like, you know, 56K dial-up speeds, basically. So I can Facebook and, like, send messages. But, I mean, really, I can't even text a picture. I can't text a picture.
Yep.
So, and then my other solution was, like, where I'm at, I have no cell phone service at all. And so I have T-Mobile service. And And I haven't found any services that really work well here, but T-Mobile has a unique feature that I've not seen anywhere else, which allows you to use any Wi-Fi signal as phone signal. So my phone works just as it works just like a normal phone using my Wi-Fi, but once again, that uses my satellite data. Yep. So I'm iffy on long phone calls, and actually this Skype call is probably murdering my internet right now, but I've got, you know, it's close to time to renew, so.
The good thing, if you do podcasts and you do the audio, I've noticed the audio doesn't take much data. It does pretty well. It's when you start doing the video is where it just sucks it dry.
Yeah.
And it's this constant kind of battle of trying to figure this stuff out. Because, again, what's working for you works in your area. It won't work in my area. I looked at Dish, and I don't think with the combination it wasn't going to work. Either I couldn't access their satellite or it was full in my area.
Yeah.
That's another thing you're going to run into is there could be a solution where you live, but if that node is full, you can't get on you can't get the service. They only have so much space on their satellites for the satellite internet that if it's full, it's full. That's why you have to call them and check, and they go, okay, we can add you. Well, that's what HughesNet did. But, yeah, they could add me, but I was at the very end of what they had left. So I wasn't, you know, I was suffering the consequences of slow speeds. Yeah. And I even looked into calling the county and going, hey, I know there's fiber optic at least close. Is there any way you guys could run it? I think it's a half mile from my house. And I spent, I don't know how many weeks I spent calling everyone because it was a third party contract. It was originally done for Border Patrol on Homeland Security. It was some weird contract with that. Like, I get that. I understand what this is all about. And so there's these dead nodes, ends of fiber optic all over the county that don't go anywhere. Okay.
Awesome.
I guess I paid for that. Great. And they're like, no, it's going to cost you a fortune to run it. And that was like even I wanted to go off the grid originally. I mean, that's what I wanted to do. But I thought if I could be tied to the grid as well, that's the best. You know, if I have that as a backup, if I need it, it's there. It was going to cost me $80,000 to run power and cable to my property.
Yeah, no, that's wow.
And it had to be above ground because it's too rocky and it's so much granite that we would have never got it underground. Then the other catch is I had to get permission from all the landowners to where this was going to have to run through.
Oh, Jesus. On top of
it. Yeah. So we're talking 80 grand and years just to get the power run up there if I could do it and cable because they go together, power, cable, telephone.
Yeah.
And I just finally said, screw it. I went, this is a complete waste of time when I can spend, I think it's going to cost me around $15,000 to run my solar. And I'm going to use wind power too. I haven't bought the turbine yet, but I have everything else is there. I have the batteries are hooked up. I have, you know, all the hardware's there and everything is there. My inverter, all that stuff. So, you know, but doing that, so I go, okay, 80 grand. Or 15 grand. And I don't have a power bill. You know?
Yeah.
And those are decisions you're going to have to make. You know, is it going to cost 80 grand to run power? Probably not. And you can buy, there's lots that have power and water already there. There's a lot of them, but they're at a great, you know, they're definitely at a premium. I've looked at them. You know, they'll spend 10 grand putting in the well. Well, they're going to charge you 25 grand. You know, because they put that well in. So the raw land is I think the cheapest way to go, but it's also the most labor intensive as well. Are you tied to anything power wise or did you do the same thing? I can't remember. I know we talked about it.
Right now I'm running on extension cords, from Mike's house because I moved my house to his land. So, extension cords. So, halfway tied to the grid.
Yeah. And that's, gosh, that's, I mean, if you're looking and trying to live kind of how, what you're used to, I would say if you can tie in, it's probably one of the best ways. But,
yeah,
you know, like I said, it depends. I mean, all those properties you can tie into, first of all, you're probably going to be able to see your neighbor.
Yep.
Everyone I looked at that had power and water rental, I could see my neighbor. Every lot I looked at, no matter what size it was, and I went, okay, that's on my list. I don't want to see my neighbor. And now I can't. We have 20-acre lots around me, and my neighbor's right is below me, but between me and them is like 15 acres, if not 20 acres. But they're down below. I mean, I have no idea where they're at. They can't see me. I can't see them.
Yeah.
But they're there. But that was part of the thing too. I just didn't want to see neighbors. I wanted to, you know, don't get me wrong. Yeah, I can see houses and stuff where I'm at, but they're like 5-10 miles away. They're way away.
Oh yeah.
You know, so yeah, there's just so many factors involved that you have to go through, and hopefully the book will, for people who are interested in it, that was the whole point of it, is to kind of show them what I went through and say, hey, I am not an expert at this whatsoever, you know, but, you know, I did kind of start from nothing, and I'm going to follow the whole process through, and here's what I did, and here's the hurdles I went through, here's what I learned, and at least it'll give people an idea of what to expect and how to do it if they want to do it.
Awesome. I got one more thing to say on the internet, and then we'll just wrap this up. Where it was a fun interview. What pisses me off, I don't know how well you researched all of the solutions when you were writing the book and looking at the internet, but there is a perfect solution for off-grid internet usage that's completely not being used.
Oh,
and that's the old analog television signals. They were planning to convert that to internet signals because it would broadcast. I mean, you think about it, when you watch old TV with your like rabbit ears, you saw streaming video live without any burps in the signal. I mean, yeah, the speed that data travels at would be some of the highest speed internet you could possibly ever have. And it's sitting there. I mean, literally, no one's using those signals anymore. And the FCA was trying to, like, you know, I guess open it up so that internet people could broadcast internet usage over those waves. And, I read about this, God, years ago, like right after they, you know, phased out those signals, and I've not heard anything else about it. And I mean, you dug into this and researched it, and you didn't hear anything about it.
No, never.
You know, it's what a waste. What a waste of, you know, that entire like bandwidth not being used.
Well, that's the frustrating part. I'm sure you've gone through this as well. Is you're like I said, you're trying to simplify your life, and you find out that there's all these roadblocks making it more complicated to get there. But they're so easy.
Yeah.
I mean, what an easy solution that is. And
yeah.
And you know why it probably isn't there? Is probably because the cable and phone companies have fought them and said, absolutely no way. We're not going to allow that. They got their lobbyists in Congress, and they're going to be like, we can't figure out how to make money off that, so screw everyone. You know? I'll put money on it. That's what it boils down to, is they can't monetize it and figure out how to screw me and you on it, so it's not going to happen. Because you're right, the technology is very straightforward and simple on that end.
See, and it's always been like that. I mean, I'm sure you know who Nikola Tesla is. He actually he was getting funding from J.P. Morgan. He was building a gigantic tower device that was possibly going to use the Earth's own rotation to send broadcast electricity through the air for anybody to get it. And as soon as J.P. Morgan found out there was no way to monitor who was tapping the flow, pulled all funding.
You both just made me realize why it's not being done. Because if you broadcast an internet signal, all you need is like internet rabbit ears to grab it. So
yeah, there's just no way of regulating who's using
son
it.
Son of a bitch.
Yep. Well,
now I'm even more mad.
Well, not only that,
that was the thing. I mean,
anyone could access it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean, back when they did that, all you needed was a television and a frickin' antenna, and you could watch certain channels, and there was no way that they could charge you for it.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's no infrastructure to monitor it, and it's impossible to monitor. Probably, I mean, there probably is a way to monitor it, but they won't pay the money to build the infrastructure to do it. But yeah. That's part of the problem with living off the grid is you have to create a lot of your own solutions and you have to kind of figure it out. And it's fun. Don't get me wrong. I mean, coming up and I love researching this stuff and trying to figure out a better way to do it. I think that's where people like me and you and Mike come in is, you know, we're doing it and we're, like I said, we're not experts at it, but we're just trying to tell you, hey, this is what I did. And I think that's a lot more information than what's been out there previously. Cause now people are starting to do it and document it. And I think it helps everyone else. And that's all I'm trying to do. Cause I know the struggles I've gone through trying to find this stuff. You know, you read articles on people who say, yeah, here's your how to live off the grid. And you read it and you go, no, that's not really it. And
no.
And I'd never seen it organized. And I would like to see the information organized and kind of, you know, and that's why I did everything the way I did it is I've spent so much time documenting it is I just have this want of showing other people how to do it. You know, you can go watch my videos. They're free. I'm not selling you anything. You know,
that's going to piss somebody off on Facebook, man.
Oh my God. Yeah.
God forbid you actually show someone how to do something by actually doing it instead of ripping off someone else's article and saying you're an expert. That's the thing that pisses me off today too. And that's part of the problem I ran into is I was reading information from people who had never done it. I'm like, okay, I'm reading an article on solar power, but you don't use solar. What the? You know, it's like, that doesn't help me. I don't need theory.
No.
I need practical application from someone who's doing it. You know? Yeah. And I think that's the tough part, too. But it's getting better. I've noticed the information I'm finding more and more. And, you know, like septic system. When I started researching that, there's a ton of information on how to do your own septic. You know, your gravity flow.
Yeah.
You know, you can do it, but again, it's got to be permitted. You just can't go do it willy-nilly. It's got to be inspected. And in the end, where's the cost savings? You know, how hard is it going to be to do it yourself? You're going to have to go get an excavator, a backhoe, rent it, drag it up there. You know what I mean? It's balancing those things out and figuring out which is the best way to do it. I mean, I could have easily done my own septic, but I have no desire to spend all that time and doing it. I just don't.
No.
I'd rather have a professional come in, do it. It's warranted. You know, if my poop starts rolling out somewhere, I'll know who to call and who to go fix it.
Yeah. Yeah. Warranty is good. Yeah. I went with the composting toilet and I'm happy with it. So,
let's talk about that. We got to talk about that. Cause I researched that to death and tell me what you did. Because I didn't look at it as a viable solution.
You know, I went with the simplest solution. Like I built a wooden box the size to fit in a 5-gallon bucket that I got from Lowe's. You know, and the top has a hole in it, and I have a toilet seat mounted to it. And then inside, I've actually gone with a pine-based kitty litter because I just like finding just sawdust is not that easy, and you can get, you know, feline pine, you know, in any pet store or on Amazon. And there's no smell. I mean, if you smell anything, it's pine, which I'm fine with, you know. And then so obviously, you know, you fill that up. My solution for dealing with that is I get the biggest plastic trash cans and I dump it in the trash can. I seal the lid on it. And then when and if I fill up one trash can, I will tape it shut, you know, I'll seal it, move it aside, make a new one, and then let that trash can sit for 2 years, you know, and it's, and it's just, I mean, basically it's pine, sawdust, and poo. 2 years, you're going to have great, you know, tree soil. I don't know if I want to plant my gardens, but, you're going to have great soil, like, you know, after those 2 years. And then I haven't filled up one trash can yet in 6 months I've been here.
No, it's because you do most of your pooping in my bathroom.
Well,
see?
No.
Well, and
I use it often, but.
Well, and I looked into that.
And yeah, there's no smell.
And for me, I looked at it as a temporary solution, but I looked at the composting toilets. Holy cow.
So those are expensive.
They're over $2,000. And I,
yeah, no, I
needed two of them. And I went, okay, I can either put in a septic system or I can have two glorified, you know, buckets is basically what it ends up being. And then once I started reading what people had to say about them and started looking at the reviews, I went, okay, this, I'm not going that way. And the thing looks like a throne. I mean, you would literally, you're like 3 feet off the ground and you probably could put a bunch of broken swords behind it and create a throne out because the things are so big and godly ugly. And then you got to piss in a separate container. I'm like, okay, so I got to pay $2,000. I got to piss in a small bucket or jug, take that out.
Yeah.
And then all the horror stories I heard about cleaning the things out and the smell. And I went, you know what?
No.
Nah. But I do like you do. If I was going to do it, I just create the same system you did.
Yeah, I mean, I have like maybe, I don't know, $20 in materials, maybe. I mean, you know, plywood and a bucket. Yeah, and oh, the toilet seat. I bought the fancy wooden toilet seat, so I'm comfy. But besides that, you know, it's just cheap and it works.
Well, and I think that's a problem too. I know we're all finding this on our own. Is that there's huge industries developed for people wanting to do what we want to do, and it's just to sucker us in. I mean, it's just to make us spend money on stupid shit that we do not need. And again, it's that balance. It's like, okay, what do I really need as opposed to what this trend is trying to sell me right now? You know, it's like the teeny home thing as far as the ones on the rolling chassis. And I've gotten nasty emails and comments on my attitude on that because I just call them flat out stupid. I'm all, it's asinine. Why would you spend all that money putting a shack on wheels that you're never going to be able to sell? You're never getting any money out of the thing. It's top heavy. It weighs a ton. It's a fire hazard. You know, most of them have no running plumbing in them. Just go buy a travel trailer, for God's sakes. You know, they're far cheaper. They've been built for decades and decades to do exactly what you want them to do. They come with warranties. You know, they already got the plumbing in them. They got everything you need.
Mm-hmm.
I just, to me, and it's funny how all these hipsters, that's the thing. I got to build my teeny home, man, that I can take anywhere. Okay. Good luck with that. You just spent the equivalent of buying a normal house on 120 square foot wooden, you know, fire trap on wheels that you don't even know how to tow. And you better be careful towing it because the odds of you rolling that thing over are pretty high. You know, and that's part of it. You know, they're kind of sucking people in. And I did a comparison to my travel trailer on one of the best well-known teeny home builders in the country, over $70,000 for a 24-foot teeny home on a rolling chassis.
Yeah. That,
whoa.
Yeah. I looked at those tiny houses, and there's a builder here in Tennessee. They look like nice people, but for a 100-square-foot house on a trailer, you're going to spend like $40,000. $40,000.
And that's as cheap as it gets.
Yeah, I mean, that's...
Yeah, and you can get an even bigger travel trailer for a lot less than that.
Well, yeah.
A $40,000 travel trailer in the equivalent size is super, super nice. It's nicer than houses in very exclusive areas. I mean, they're beautiful. I've looked at them. I went with a cheaper line for now. Because this is my second travel trailer. I kind of weaned my way in it. But I know the nice ones that are really nice, there's no comparison between those and a teeny home. I mean, they're so much more advanced. They have everything. But you can buy them used and then pay way less for them. You know, and I got approached by a couple people saying, hey, man, I see your project. I build teeny homes. And you contact them, and they're former or current general contractors who went bust during the boom fallout. And they were probably screwing everyone then. Now they're screwing everyone on teeny homes. They found a new little niche to screw people on. And I may sound negative on contractors, but I've been dealing with general contractors in numerous forms in houses, apartments I've owned for over 20 years. And I swear to God, talk about one of the scummiest industries known to man. I have fired more general contractors than any trade known to man. I don't know what it is about these guys. I have a large part in my book where I just go off. I mean, I am so pissed off at some of these guys. They have no moral compass, and that's where you got to be careful too, is you're going to be moving to a new area and you're going to have to start from scratch. And these guys are just waiting for you, just waiting. And they're so unscrupulous, and that's why you just have to be really careful. And if you get a bad vibe, fire them. I mean, that's my attitude now, is if I feel something doesn't feel right, fire them right away. Don't wait. Don't play around. Terminate them right on the spot. Tell them to pack their shit up and get off your spot. Get off your lot.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Did you use any contractors on any of your stuff, James?
Nope. I bought the building from, like I said, an Amish building guy. So, you know, beard and everything. He builds these tiny structures. And he does do some, like, pretty – he does, like, do some finished out ones. But the price on that is ridiculous. Like, I think my 12 by 20 building cost $4,000. And that was, you know – I looked at it. If I had bought the materials and built it myself, it would have still came out to be about $4,000.
Now, is that the lot that we went and looked at one time?
Yeah.
Because I remember on that lot, I mean, they had one tiny structure. I mean, it looked like a small cabin.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, it was $10,000.
Yeah. I mean, it finished out and stuff. So he built that. And then me and a friend and like me and Mike did the insulation. So the inside was pretty much done by like me and some friends. I had an electrician friend that helped me. So my house is actually like the electric box and the wiring on the outside is an RV. If I could get this to an RV park, I could plug in and have power inside.
Nice.
So the plan is to build an RV pole outside and connect that into Mike's power pole. But I just haven't had the money to do it right now, and that works. So yeah, friends and me did everything, and that helped keep the cost down, and I didn't have to deal with idiots.
And that's the biggest thing. And I tried avoiding the idiots, and it's really hard. And again, like I said, I'm doing it a different way because I wanted this house is kind of like my dream house too. This is what I've been dreaming about for 20 years, and this remote place that has these beautiful views. So I didn't want to screw it up, and I knew if I did it all on my own, there'd be parts of it that would definitely be screwed up. And when you do it yourself, you can find them because you know where they're all at because you did it. Not to say it's not bad that someone else does it and you can't see it, but I like
– there's merits to both ways.
And that's what I like is the dichotomy of the two different ways, because I know a guy that he had a construction background. And he works in the RV business. So he really knows how to build remote kind of, you know, transitional houses. And that's what he did. He went to Home Depot, bought the kit. I mean, the guy has a construction background and he even did it. And what he did is he just built upon the basic framework of that shed, and he bought a big one. I mean, it was a pretty big shed, and he just basically went in and finished it out and put everything in. And I think that is honestly to me, the best solution, because it is.
I call it the best bang for your buck. I mean,
it is.
Really, it
really is. But you're going to have some.
The only down. What's that?
You're going to have to have some skills, though. I mean, if you don't have any construction skills and trying to do that on your own, it's going to be pretty brutal. I mean, there's going to be a steep learning curve.
And your time frame goes up a lot.
Yeah. But realizing, too, that what you've just done is not going to be considered a permanent coded residence for the most part.
Oh, no.
You have to realize that. That's the difference, too, I like, is there's two different ways to go about it. If you want a permanent residence, you're going to have to follow certain construction codes. But also, depending where you're at, depending on the size of the shed, you do not need a permit. You know, I think it's around 200 square foot or less It might be a little bigger that you don't need a permit for any of it. You can just put up a shed and you're totally fine. You're totally within all the rules. And that's what you have to decide. You know, I think it's awesome to do it that way. And I actually plan at some point, I want to do it that way. I want to get another property somewhere else and do it the way you did it and have another.
It's addicting. Yeah. Like I said, my house, so I hadn't actually said it, my house, I think not including the loft, which is 12 by 8, so it runs the whole length of the living room because it's above my living room, and it goes out to about the end of it. So not counting that, it's a 204-square-foot structure. I'm pretty happy with it. But I also like – I kind of want to like try other alternative building methods and have like, you know, a little shack here and a little shack – like an underground house there and like, you know, a Bufati and a Cobb and, you know, so – I kind of want other little structures to build just, you know, for the experience of building them and just, you know, for fun.
It's addicting. And that's what I'm finding.
It is.
Says, you know, I got trees on my lot. So I'm all, oh, I could build a cabin. I could build a true trapper cabin or hunting cabin and do it on my own and won't cost me a whole lot because I have most of the resources right here. And it is. It's addicting.
Right.
But I built mine more as a home base. That's kind of how I looked at it. Like, this is my place to go. This is going to be a permanent where, you know, I'm going to have this for the rest of my life, which is risky. You know, it's also risky. What happens if I do all this and I don't like it? Well, there you go. I've got an off-the-grid property that I would have to try and sell and get rid of.
It'd be hard,
It would definitely narrow the people who I could sell to. But, you know, I made that decision. Yeah. I had the lot for a while, and I really kind of decided and spent time in there and went, you know, no, this is where I want to live.
Right.
But with this, that's, I think, that you have to realize it's a risk, you know. It could all go south on you, like anything else. And that's why I also decided to do it to code and do it right, too, because I knew if I didn't, I kind of half-assed everything, that I would even have a harder time selling it. And I looked at properties that people had done that. They basically threw something up and, you know, tried building it all on their own, didn't get any permits, did nothing, you know, but it's their lot. They built it and they were trying to sell it as a property with a real dwelling on it. And it's like I could go look, you know, I was looking at them 3 years ago. They're still for sale. No one wants that because you have to go in. You have to demo. You can't even use what they have. You have to demo the whole thing, start from scratch. And what you're doing is these people probably learned is they just dumped a bunch of money into something that was worthless. And when they went to sell, you're not going to get any of that money back because it's worthless. You're selling raw land again because no one wants.
Even if the structure was like great, like they built like an amazing, like off the grid, you know, house, nobody can get financing for that. Like you said earlier, you're going to have to find someone that actually has, you know, pocket cash, the money, or enough credit cards to, you know, withdraw that money to pay for it. And that limits, you know, even further.
Exactly. Because you don't have an owner occupancy certificate. And that's what I'm going for. I'm doing everything to get that owner occupancy certificate. So once I have that, now it's financeable. You know, at least it'll be tricky, but someone can finance it because everything's done to code. Everything's done correctly. You know, they can figure out a way to do it. If I don't do that, there is zero financing. There is nothing.
Yep.
There is land. You can finance it as land, but that's it.
True.
You know, and
you take all your value.
Yeah. You screwed yourself yet again. And that's how I think, I hope I didn't discourage a bunch of people with this interview, but
only the poor Californians.
What's that?
Only the poor Californians that live in the worst state.
Oh God! You know, like I said, I don't regret that decision for a second. One bit. You know, it's every time I come back and just visit and stay, it's I feel like I'm suffocating at times. I really do because it's just such a different mindset and such a different attitude towards life that I think I've just kind of grown away from that.
Yeah, and to all of our listeners out there, we're not saying that everybody in California is an idiot. We're just saying that per capita, they have more than their fair share.
Yeah, I mean, I just had a guy in California buy a Survival Punk T-shirt. So if you're listening, you don't suck. Your neighbors probably do, though.
And I have followers and customers in California as well. And, you know, it's just it's hard. I mean, I had a guy commenting he's in L.A., and he's trying to figure out how to do this. And, you know, he's asking me all these questions. And, you know, I think, gosh, going from L.A. to what I'm doing, that's a huge jump. But it's out there. I mean, he's not from there. And he just says, I hate it. Anyone who's been and spent time in L.A., I'm always fascinated by people that say, I love living in L.A. and I'm all, how?
No.
It is like, I have a famous saying, it's like my asshole, but dirtier. I mean, I used to say that about a couple other places in the country. And I think I may have coined that term all on my own. I'm not sure if I stole that from someone or not. But
I'm going to steal that from you.
And I just, L.A. is just a cesspool. It just, you spend ungodly amounts of time wasted in traffic, bullshit, and pain to live in a place that just isn't pleasant. I don't get it. I don't understand how anyone could actually be enjoying their life living there.
I have only visited San Diego years ago, and it was a really nice city to visit. I had a great time there. I may visit again one day, maybe, but I would hate to live there. It's a great place to visit.
Yeah.
So, tell our listeners, Gary, where they can find you online, see what you're doing, buy your books and all that good stuff.
My main website is primalpowermethod.com. That's where all my books. I have a supplement line. It's all health-based right now, but I have my off-the-grid projects and in my blog and the videos. All that's on YouTube, which is youtube.com/primalpowermethod. And my website's kind of the hub, though. That's the best place. Everything's linked in there. And I give have a bunch of ton of free information. And it's most of it is non-filtered. So there's no, you get full-blown Gary. Yeah, there's no.
Awesome.
I pretty much don't filter anything I put on there. I try not to.
Anytime. I like that. Yeah.
The fuck is filtering anyway?
Yeah.
I'm not.
We tried that and it didn't work.
Well, yeah. I'm not here to make everyone happy. My followers have a certain mindset. I have a certain mindset. If it's not for you, hey man, it's not for you. That's all there is to it.
Exactly. That's exactly how we feel. So we'll have links to all that in the show notes. The show will. We're doing back-to-back episodes today, actually. Not back-to-back. We're going to record another one later on today with someone that lives in California.
Oh, boy.
Sorry. another paleo guy. But
hopefully he hasn't canceled the interview now.
Well, he hasn't heard this, no. But yeah, not yet anyway. But, yeah, it should be out Wednesday. I'm going to run this one first, and then I'll ping you and send you an email when it comes out. So you can share it and enjoy it, and we almost hit 2 hours, so let's go ahead and wrap this up.
We again, man, we get on this and it just goes for
yeah. See, I was telling Mike that I'm gonna have you back on end of the month, beginning of the next month or something, because I want to give you those hardball nutrition questions, like the ones that like geek me out, sort of like a paleo 202 or 303,
sweetie.
A PhD. So that way you actually have to really struggle because you have a lot of information. I've heard you. I have some gut health questions, some other tough balls that it'll be fun. It'll be fun. It probably will go 2 hours too.
Well, perfect. And it's such. I think people are starting to realize that I'm so varied in what I do, and it's confusing as a business model, though. It really screws me on that end.
Yeah, it does.
I'm trying to go into a whole life simplification model. It'll take years to piece it all together, but that's kind of the end goal in the end, and we'll see if it works. I mean, the health stuff's great. but I have so many interests and I'm into so many things and I want to share it. And I like the communities, that it's so much fun that I want to try and create something kind of an A to Z on what I'm doing. And not be Dr. Phil kind of thing, but just say, hey, I'm an average guy. Here's how I did it. Here's what I think. It works for you. It works for you. And people appreciate that I don't bullshit around. And if I'm wrong, I'm wrong. Hey, and that's part of the problem I think I have with the paleo crowd is they don't like to admit they're wrong on anything.
Yeah.
And who is it out of L.A. or California?
Jeff Nimoy.
Oh, yeah? Okay. I know who that is.
Yeah. He's good. He's good. I like him. Politically, we disagree, but he's good. He has some good recipes. His paleo bread recipe is what I use.
Yeah, he's in those groups, and I think he is out of L.A., if I remember right. Is he?
I think so.
Because I think he's got ties to something with Hollywood or something like that. I can't remember.
He's a voice actor. He does voice acting in movies, and you know his uncle, Leonard Nimoy. So, well, it's been great having you on, Gary. I've got to, so today's my cheat day and I'm probably going to eat something bad for me, but I'm going to enjoy it.
Oh, I am too. I'm going to go to the coffee shop, grab another cup of coffee and work.
All right. Have a good day, Gary.
You too. See you, James. See you, Mike.
Right. See you, bye.
See ya.